good evening and welcome to Conversations with Crystal. I'm your hostess, Crystal. Thank you for joining me again this evening. This evening's guest is one of those rare breeds I managed to find another one of, and that is a drummer. This evening's guest would have to be my favourite all-time person. He tells it like it is. He has this way of drumming that is just like clockwork. Never misses a beat, never ever messes up, ever that I've heard. And he has to be one of the nicest people on the planet. He is a master drummer extraordinaire. Please welcome Jim Finn. Good evening, Jim. How are you going this evening?
Good day, Crystal. Thank you for having me on your show, darling.
Oh, you're very welcome. And I'm really pleased to be able to catch up with you because it's been a little while since I've seen you.
Oh, yeah. Things have got in the way. It's called life.
Yeah, and it's called having gigs every weekend,
yeah.
which we love,
right? That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Keeps the wolf from the door.
100%. Now, in your intro there, I said you're one of my favourite people, and I will explain to the listeners why. Now, some years ago, it would probably be like seven or more probably, I had a friend and she said, come down to this blues jam. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, cool. And there was Jim, as you are. Yeah. And I'm just like, wow. And you're like, you're like, come on, you're going to get up and have a sing. And I'm like, yeah, nah. And then eventually you kind of talked me into getting back up on a stage. Yeah. So I thank you very much for that because I've never looked back.
Yeah, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Yes. So I credit you with giving me some confidence back. So thank you.
Thank you very much. It's kind of when we were running the jams, it was all about everyone being involved, good, bad, or indifferent. It didn't really matter. If you were there and you wanted to have a go, you should be allowed to have a go, you know. And, you know, those that weren't great, we tried to talk to and offer encouragement and you know, work towards a thing of betterment for them. And in your case, it worked.
Certainly did. As I said, gigging every weekend, I am not going to complain.
Absolutely. And, you know, greatest admiration, you and Robbie, what you've done, what you've managed to do. You had your band going, you had an idea on that. That wasn't working. You pulled it all back into a workable level.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
And you can always grow from the two.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's what it's about, isn't it? Kind of seeing not quite working, let's tweak it a little bit, and get on with it. And you're right, it's working. And plus, you've got to have the right players, you know, around
people's
you.
People's most important.
Oh, yeah. And being able to get along with those people, being on the same thought process as those people, that's incredibly important.
Well, it kind of is, but some of the greatest bands have been at each other's throats the whole time, like Cream. Ginger Baker.
Were they really?
Oh, yeah. Ginger Baker and Jack Bruce had to be held apart almost nightly. But what an amazing rhythm section. The way they worked together was just profound.
Yeah.
You know, but they didn't like each other. Sometimes the lack of tension works really well, but sometimes the tension just gives the performance that tension. I remember seeing them, I made the mistake of watching their last concert. Second, I saw their real last concert back in, it must have been early 70s, and it was just mind-blowingly good. And then I saw them come back and do it again 30 years later, and the fire had gone.
Oh, right.
It had gone. That fire was no longer there. I think Jack and Ginger were actually smiling at each other at times, you know.
They got, you know, a little bit mellow in their old age.
Say
maybe.
That, yeah, yeah.
But anyway, you know what?
It was a loss for us all.
Yes, that's for sure. That's for sure.
Well,
now, Jim, I want to get on to talking about you.
Okay.
Yeah,
sure
I'd
I
love
can do
that.
That.
Now, I know that as a very young chap, you played like the drum in a marching band. Am I correct?
No, it was actually a bagpipe band.
A bagpipe band.
Called the Adelaide Irish Pipe Band. I was 5 years old when I started playing drums with them.
5 years old.
And I kind of loved drums. It was just, you know, something I was passionate about and remained passionate. You know, probably should have not been so lazy and learnt the guitar as well because, you know, but I was more interested in being a drummer and you know, running bands and doing that from a drummer's perspective. Let's call it leading from, if you like.
Yeah. So at 5 years old, why at 5 years old? I mean, you're barely out of nappies.
Ah, well, I can tell you, barely out of nappies is about right. But I came from a very musical household. My father was a musician, Irish musician, which was a bit of a problem earlier on. But anyway, you know, and my mum just loved music. You know, even though she couldn't hold a tune in a bucket, she just loved it, you know.
Oh,
and
okay.
So she'd get up in the morning and the radio would go on and there'd be Beatles and stuff like that. And the old man would say, "What's this trash?" But the rest of us just ignored him. And I remember, like, one of my earliest memories was playing this red plastic tennis racket in front of my family doing the entertainment thing, which is a very Irish thing, right? In every household in Ireland, everybody has to contribute to the family nights. You sing, you dance, you tell a story, you recite poetry, you tell jokes, but everybody has to contribute. And so my family was exactly that way. So, you know, my earliest memories of me plucking the red tennis racket to the sounds of "I Want to Hold Your Hand" by the Beatles, you know. And 11 years old, I knew that I was going to be a musician. I heard a whole lot of Love by Led Zeppelin, and I've gone, oh my God, that's what I do.
That's it. That was the defining moment.
The defining moment, yes. Yes, skinny little 11 year old.
So, Jim, did you come from Ireland or were you born here?
I was born here. My mother and father kind of had the classic Irish love story. They had to travel 12,000 miles to meet each other.
Oh, and, beautiful.
But the irony was they lived 12 miles apart in Ireland and never knew each other. But their older brothers would have a drink together. And one night, one of them says, I think it was Uncle Joe said to Uncle Jim, he says, "My Moira, she's found this bloke in Adelaide, Thomas Finn. Is he related to you?" "Oh, yes, it's me brother."
How classic is
well,
that?
Well, you know, the Irish love story, mate. Everything's got to be a roundabout to get to where you want to go.
Oh, that's the truth, isn't it? Even not Irish, it's about that too.
Well, you know? The Irish kind of get on with it better than a lot of other races. They call it the crack, you know. And things go wrong and things go right when the crack is happening. And nobody determines, you just get on with it, you know.
That's it. Now, Jim, so at 11 years old, when you decided, yes, this is the moment, I'm going to be a musician.
Yeah.
This is what I'm going to do. So how did you then progress to doing a show or being in a band, or how did that happen and at what age?
Okay, well, 11 I did my first professional gig. And I got $30, which was back then almost the equivalent to a week's wages. So it's like the gambler that gets bitten by the bug. You know, there was that going on. But this was with my father's band.
Right.
Once I got to playing with my own band, money wasn't quite so good, you know. But, from there we had a school band, a good friend of mine, Keith Armiger, and I, we did a lot of stuff together, a lot of harmonies and that sort of stuff, and had a few bands and things. Then managed to do a gig for the nuns at a girls' school for their Christmas night or something or other. And the nun came and picked us up in a combi van to take us to the gig, you know.
How cool.
Oh, well, it was kind of, you know, I'd love to turn up to a gig these days with a nun driving the rig, you know.
That'd be a hoot.
Come on, help us in with this stuff, Mother Superior.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be fantastic, wouldn't it? And it's, and I'm sure some of them, being as tough as old boots that they are, would have been able to do it too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Sister Patril, 93 years old, still able to wield the pencil and blacken your knuckles.
Yes. Goodness gracious. And did you cop that very often,
Jim? Let's say regularly.
Oh, dear. Regularly. Well, I'm glad that they didn't, you know, like damage your hands and break your spirit.
No, no, no. The more they did that, the more it kind of made me want to rebel against them. You know, I was the classic Irish rebel without a clue, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jim, we're a lot of, I'm Scottish Irish. So Scottish Irish.
They're the same people, you know. They are the same people. The original Scots were called Picts. They all died.
Yes.
And then people from the Northern Ireland who thought the weather wasn't bad enough decided to go to Scotland.
Go to Scotland, and that's right.
And they became called the Scotties. So, you know,
I'm quite like you, because if someone tells me no or tries to put me in my place, I'll go, oh, no, you don't. I'll do it twice and I'll do it better each time, and then I'll take the picture to show you.
Yeah, won't back down.
Nah. Tom Petty won't back down.
There's kind of, you know, there's bullies and there's people that won't be bullying the world. And thank God for the anti-bully bullies.
Yes. Now, Jim, so you played in your dad's band. Yeah. So what kind of music did they play?
Today, even in Ireland, they describe it as diddly music. Diddly, 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 diddly music. But it was what was classed, the style of music was called Cayley music, which is Irish folk music.
Okay.
And, you know, I kind of, because he forced me to a lot of things, I rejected a lot of that stuff to my own detriment.
Yes.
And when I was 36, I took him, you know, he came up to visit in Sydney, and I took him out to see his mates play. And, you know, it was at that point another, what do they call it, affinity moment, where I realised that I'd wasted so much time hating something because I was naive and, you know, my father pushed it down my throat and I wasn't going to accept that, you know, that bollocks. But, you know, thankfully I grew up, you know, and so that's all part of my heritage now. I finally, you know, understand that I am an Irishman as well as an Australian, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah. And, like, I go to the centre of Australia and I feel like I've come home, but when I landed in Dublin the first time after 40 years, I felt like I'd come home.
Yes.
You know, can you have a home in two places?
Absolutely you
can. Well, I think the answer is yes to, you know.
Yeah, absolutely you can. It's where your heart lies, and that can be two places. Absolutely, absolutely. Yep. Now, what did your dad sing or did he play an instrument? I can't remember, did you
he
tell
He could
me?
Sing, but he chose not to. He chose not to. And look, a lot of what they did didn't require singing. It was music. Like a lot of instrumental stuff with, you know, recognisable motives. And some of those songs actually had words and, you know, my dad wouldn't sing because there's others around that could sing far better than him.
Right.
You know, and we're talking about the days when things were a lot different. Like, you know, back in his day, you had people that wrote songs, you had people that played songs, and they weren't necessarily the same people. And then you had people that sang songs, and they weren't necessarily anything else but singers.
And
when the Beatles came along, you know, in a real big way, they changed the status quo because they wrote their own songs, they sang their own songs, and they played their own songs.
Oh, and didn't they do it to perfection?
Well, yeah, and the Stones are still doing it now.
You know, yes.
Like, I don't think that without the Beatles, a lot of other things wouldn't exist, you know.
I totally agree with that, Jim. Totally agree with that.
But then if we go back 10 years, Elvis was a milestone. He was a turning point, you know. Chuck Berry. I was talking to somebody about this the other night, you know, and I said, well, and they were lovely younger people, right, who had a keen interest in music. And so we talked about the heritage of music, you know, that if we didn't have the swing bands in the 30s and 40s, we wouldn't have had Chuck Berry, Louis Jordan, all those people, rock and roll developing, Elvis coming along, the Beatles loving Elvis and going, well, let's take this somewhere else. Oh, sorry, slipped that one in there, couldn't help that one. You know?
Yeah.
So I actually think that the youngsters these days kind of think music was invented when digital came along, you know, and some of them are really quite surprised to come out and see people actually play things. Oh,
yeah,
well,
right.
People do this as well. I thought just machines did this, right? And now we're entering into the time of AI where you can get AI to write a song for you. You know, you don't even have to use your own brain, and you can be a total cretin and still call yourself a musician. But it was in the 80s. Where all this stuff started to go wrong. It was when record companies started to throw information into computers about a song and what was its likelihood of reaching the top 10. And if its likelihood was less than 82%, it wasn't even considered. So if we were to use that same philosophy back in the 60s and the 70s with the Doors and Led Zeppelin and all those guys, they never would have got a look in.
No, it would make you wonder, doesn't it?
Yeah, because they were breaking down
what music would have been like.
You know? Yeah. They broke down barriers.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And
wow. Yep. And I think we're extremely lucky to have been, and I'm sure you would have seen a lot of those fellas.
Yeah.
You know, to have that in our lives and all the Beatles and Elvis.
Yeah.
Know.
And look, up until 30 years ago, I would have liked to have been 10 years older because, you know, those guys really had the best of it. They really had the best of it. Like, I have a mate that when he was in matric at school, he was earning more on a weekend than his school teacher was earning across a 5-day week.
Wrong profession.
And but I think they finally caught up with us, Crystal, you know.
Yes,
so, you know, they
managed
to rest us back to 1982 wages in a lot of ways.
You know what? You're not the first muso that has said that.
But we're not going to be the last one either.
Sorry?
Not going to be the last one either.
No, who say we're getting paid exactly the same coin as we were 40 years ago. And I'm like, no.
Oh, yeah.
And they're
got a diary, a 1982 diary moulding around the place somewhere. And, you know, on occasion I'll look through those things just to remember. And here was, like, we divided $350 between three players, so it was $115 and 16 and 66 cents each or something, you know. But that 66 cents back in those days would actually buy you something.
Yeah, probably like a loaf of bread or
a beer,
tub of margarine or a beer.
A beer. I look, you know,
dead cents, 66 cents. Yeah, I wish they were that now.
I'm remembering, you know, that cigarettes around that time, that 66 cents would probably buy me a packet of cigarettes. Right.
Wow.
You know, so cigarettes were like, you know, 5 cents each. Now they're $2 and something each.
Isn't it horrendous?
Oh, well, you know, it's all part of the plan, isn't it?
Yes.
You know.
And I guess too, when you're talking about getting that kind of money in 1982 and now fast forward to, what is it, 40? It's over 40 years, isn't
40
it?
Years. No, 40 41 years. Now.
Yeah. Yeah, 41. And sometimes that's the same amount they're paying.
Yeah. Yeah.
it's I wonder when the venues are going to catch up.
No, it's never going to happen. The landscape's changed. Right, and what that means ideally is, you know, we're in the mind over matter part of our existence now. Like video stores were almost extinct, but I'm not prepared to put up with that. So I keep producing songs and records. You know, I've got, I think, 4 different recording projects going on at the moment, and we all know that for anybody to take these things home, and there's no guarantee that they're going to play them because they won't have a CD player, but we have to, right, when electricity all falls down and the WWW disappears, those CDs will be the only records that we have that we actually existed at all.
Yeah, that's right.
You know?
That's right.
And like,
I agree with you there, Jim. I totally agree with you.
Well, my biggest concern at this point in time is the desire of the banks and the government to eradicate cash out of our system.
Yep.
Right now, just yesterday, what happened?
Yeah, exactly. The whole Optus network absolutely died, and I couldn't get onto anybody.
Yeah, but I'm on the phone, and my internet died, and I'm trying to do some work here. And
me too.
These people have made it so that I have to be online to record any music because it's all subscription now. I can't buy a recording thing; I have to subscribe. Mm. And that means that they can screw me over every 12 months.
100%, I'm hearing you there.
You know, and this is what we've become. And, like, I'm okay. I'm 64. If I die tomorrow, I had the greatest of lives and I have no complaints. But my son is not 64, and whilst he's had a pretty damn good life, there's still a lot more for him to experience, and I want it to be good.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, Jim, just on recording your own music and such, I think we might take just a short minute here
to listen to
one of your recordings. Lovely. So we shall listen to that right about now. And this is Money Changes Everything.
Failed to give for many a folk, caught it to
Once again, Jim, I've listened to a lot of your original music and you never fail to excite me and show me something new. So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you very much for that. Look, I'm not very good at writing love songs. Paul McCartney does that really well. So
he does.
Why should I trample on, you know? And so to me, what I do is I write the blues, and I don't write the blues like black people did in 1967 in Harlem, because I don't live there.
No, that's right.
Right, they inspired me to write about where I live, and that's what I try and do. I try and write about the world I live in, you know, just expand people's minds where you can.
Yeah. And that's what I love about your music. And first time I heard an original, I actually said, I don't know who I was with, and I said, I haven't heard that song before. I don't know who does that one. Only to find out later that, yep, that's one of your originals. And then I was kind of hooked into hearing or listening for more when you played and performed.
Yeah.
Is this an original? Is that an original? And, yeah, I was quite happily surprised to see that a lot of the music that you performed, even back then, was originals.
Well, so look, Crystal, you have to have your voice, right?
100%.
I've got, I think, 13 or 14 albums of original material. Some I've written on my own, some I've written with other people. I love to do a co-write. But with all that stuff in hand, not every song suits.
No.
Right? So you have to be pretty, you know, ruthless at choosing your own songs that will work in a live show that you do. You have to be ruthless, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And
now,
go on.
No, you're right, continue, sorry.
Well, I'm a trifle worried that I'm raving on.
No, not at all, not at all. Okay. It's just I'm eager to keep talking because, you know, I can talk underwater, Jim.
Me too. In fact, I've been told I can talk under a ton of wet cement.
Now, I think that track that we just listened to, Money Changes Everything, that totally goes to what we were just talking about, doesn't it? With the cashless society and all of that kind of thing.
Well, there's another little story in here too. It's actually the story of Elvis.
Okay.
So I feel so sorry for Elvis, you know.
Me too.
He was kind of friendless because of who he was. People were afraid to be his friends. The guys that could have been his friends, like Jerry Lee Lewis and that, we're all so intimidated by Elvis's, I don't know, being on top of the charts or whatever. And, you know, there's always a little bit of jealousy in that involved with that sort of stuff. But I do remember reading a story about him. And the story was that he had three desires in him. One was to be a singer. We know he did that. One was one was to have a badge. He ended up with a badge, right?
Yes.
Nixon gave him a badge. Nixon gave him a shield.
Yes, he did.
Yes, and the third desire was to be a minister. So this is where the hokey pokey and the bloody blah 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 comes in, because then I imagined, based on a story I read in a Post magazine about 20 years ago, Elvis sighted in Tasmania. So I finished off the song with Elvis escaping to Tasmania, where he now runs a church, but they found out about him and they won't let him go.
Yeah, right.
So Elvis has left the building, and this time he didn't want to go. But he says, this is the Elvis line, the truth is, boy, money changes everything. And
and it does.
Yes, yes. And if Elvis didn't have that money, if he was, you know, as big as Johnny Cash or Jerry Lee Lewis and not lauded over for his looks, you know, he did 80 movies in a year.
In a year?
Yeah.
Three
quarter movies a week. He would have been running from set to set to set to set. And this was all that blood-sucking parasite, Colonel Tom Parker. I'm glad he's dead so I can say what I really think about him.
Yeah. Well, you know, you wouldn't be the only one thinking the same thing.
Well, that movie about Elvis showed how bad, almost how bad.
Yeah, it's probably add 10 times to that. I was quite surprised because I never actually realised that Elvis, you know, that he never actually toured the world. I didn't realise that. And I don't know why I didn't realise it. I probably never thought about
it.
But
you know the reason why?
Yeah, because of him, because of Tom Parker.
He was an illegal alien, and if he left the country, he wouldn't get back in. So he never let Elvis out of his sight.
Yeah.
Right? But that didn't mean he kept him in sight. He employed all these other people who Elvis paid, not him. He took 60% of Elvis's gross, not net.
Jeez, gross, no. Right?
And he died penniless.
Oh, wow. How did that
he
happen?
Was a gambler.
You've got to ask.
He was a gambler.
Yeah,
he kept throwing his money into somebody else's pocket because he had Elvis there, he thought, forever to provide for him.
That's right. Yes, it's what a sad, sad story about Elvis. Yeah. But you know what? His legacy continues and we've got to be very, very grateful for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I wanted the song to finish with Elvis in a good place.
Yeah, and I think you did that spectacularly.
You know, even though it ended up badly, they found him again. He was in a good place when they found him. And he's been you know, since his supposed death. This is only my story. His supposed death.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. And he ran away and he went to Tasmania and he became a preacher. And I would like to think that that's what he did and he enjoyed the last part of his life, you know.
I would too, and you know what? What if that actually did happen? How good would that have been for him, eh?
To finally be accepted just for being this guy,
just for being a guy,
instead of an icon, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Now we'll just move on a little bit there, Jim. And now I know that you love the blues and you write the blues so, so well.
Thank you.
What other, is that the only, that's not the only genre of music you like, I know that, or play. So would you like to talk a little bit about that?
Okay, well, let me start by listing the bands. The band that I've had together myself now for 23 years is called Finn. And we play blues. And we kind of try to educate people as well. So we play rhythm and blues and try to make them see that these guys learnt from those guys. Yeah. So,
yes.
Entertainment and education. The original concept of television was entertainment and education. Somewhere along the line, it slipped to what can we sell you and how much bullshit can we put into your life.
And here's the Kardashians.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Here's a lesson on how not to live your life.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
And so I kind of have this sense that it's our duty to provide something in this world, you know, in the terms of, like, my job for me is to make people forget about their existence, at least for a few hours.
Yeah.
Right? And if I can do that and they'll walk away with a smile on their face despite what they've got to do tomorrow, then job done. Right? But that's just on the, hey, we're going out tonight front. You know, the second front is try and write an alternate but real advent of what happens to us all in our society and what's been happening at a grassroots level, you know. And so it's very important that community is being destroyed. People need to understand that. A lot of things that happen in COVID I find pretty horrible, that, you know, all the pubs were bought up and the majority of poker machines were sent out to another area. That area usually contained a lot of poor people.
Yes.
You know, and so when does enough become enough? Apparently there's more wealth in the world in people's bank accounts than there is actually wealth in the world. And I need everybody to understand that if we don't take a stand against what's happening to us, the majority of us, that we'll end up starving and they will push us to other wars that we really don't need.
100% agree with you. 100%. Yeah. So you've got Finn that you've had for over 20 years.
Sorry, yes, okay. Finn and Keith Todd and myself got together through COVID and had a real good time playing what we were allowed to in people's backyards and that, because we knew we were kind of relieving them of some of that fucking tension that they were going through by being locked down. I've done it again, haven't I? By being without my language, sorry.
That's okay.
So Keith and I then started playing at the Merton Hotel and we became Fink, and eventually we got Jack in there. And so this is a lovely little spot to play, as you know yourself. You know, good vibe, it's local.
Yeah, and great people.
And once again, during COVID, I needed to write material, and I wrote maybe 50 songs through COVID. I'm just getting to the last of them now.
Dead set. Yeah. 50 songs. Yeah. I maybe wrote two.
Yeah, but, you know, like, I got to be busy. If I'm not busy, I'm sending myself insane.
Absolutely. You know, so, absolutely.
Like, I remember nights where I'd get stuck in down in my studio and I'd be there till 7:30.
Yeah.
7 o'clock in the fucking morning. Oh, 7 o'clock in the morning, and I'd see the sun come up and then I'd realise, my God, I've been here for like 12 or 13 hours, and it's great, you know.
Yeah.
It's really the – was almost a good thing about COVID that I was given all this freedom to just go and write songs, not having to worry about gigs or money or anything else, just go and write songs, mate.
And I think that was one of the things about COVID too, was there was no expectation on anybody to have to be anywhere at a certain time, do anything or blah, blah, blah. You know, that has obviously two sides to that coin, but it was kind of good in a way because, like yourself, Writing 50 songs is magnificent. What an achievement.
Yeah, but look, God, a lot of them write themselves, you know.
Yes, I do know.
Yeah, a big part of it was about, and I've said this a few times, well, you guys gave me almost, you know, 12 months off, paid me to sit at home and write songs about how bad you're doing. Thank you.
Yes.
And that was it, about how bad they were doing. And they were doing fucking bad. Oh, God.
They were doing very bad, yes.
Can you beat these things out?
I can try. We'll see how we go, Jim. I'll just put an 18 plus on it, eh?
Exactly what I was going to say. 18 plus,
yeah. Now, I want to go back to Finkt, F-I-N-K-T. Yes. So it's Finn for you and KT for Keith Todd. Yes. Now, Keith is also one of my favourite people as well. He's such a nice fella. He's also a songwriter. Yes. So I think that the pairing of you two together has been a very, very good thing because you're kind of both on know what the other is doing without really needing to explain it.
He just starts songs some nights when there's me and him together when we're doing a duo. And he looks at me and I go, oh, God, here we go again. I don't know what this one is going to be, but I'll deal with it. But look, I've got to say this to you, Crystal, right? I got my old mate here, Shane, and I feel so privileged that I've been allowed another Shane into my life, and that's Keith. Somebody that I just work so harmoniously with.
Yes. And he's got a very gentle nature, Keith.
Well, you know, that's a funny thing too, you know, and I'm not going to talk about that on radio, but, you know, fingers in a glove, all right?
Yeah, that's it. And, of course, the third part of your trio there with Keith is Jack Dawson.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Jack is a multi-talented musician. Little spider fingers there going up and down that bass. Like nobody's business. As his mum Tanya calls him. And he's Keith's adopted son.
Yes.
So, you know, the family that plays together stays together.
Yeah. And, you know, like this guy's, he just continuously blows me away, right? His ear is so good. I have never enjoyed playing. I don't know whether I should say this publicly or not, but I'm going to anyway.
Here we go.
He is my Jack Bruce. I have never enjoyed, not that we're going to fight, but he's my Jack Bruce. I've never, ever, ever enjoyed playing with a bass player like Jack.
And also Jack is, you know, he seems to have gotten a lot of, well, from Tanya, she'll tell you like it is. But from Keith, that gentleness also. Jack's got that gentleness.
Very much so. And look, I rather than call it gentleness, I would call it quiet confidence.
That's probably better.
About Jack is he truly knows who he is.
Yes, he does.
No bullshit.
Yes.
No bullshit from the fella. He knows who he is.
None.
You know, and I love that about him. His knowledge is wonderful. There's nothing really that I can, you know, except he's a little bastard. He knows how to play too many instruments, you know.
So should I
list some of them for you? His first love is guitar.
Yes.
He plays drums. He plays bass. He plays piano. He plays saxophone.
Wow. I didn't know he could play saxophone.
No, neither did I until a while back. And if you can do that, then you can do a whole bunch of other things as well.
Absolutely. They're quite interchangeable. Now, speaking of Jack being able to play other instruments, can you or is drums your forte?
I have my father's piano accordion. My father's accordion, button accordion, I think he called it.
Okay,
I've had many attempts on that and I've given up. I like to call myself a club-handed keyboard player.
Okay.
So what that
means, club-handed keyboard player, but as I said, an exceptional drummer.
Look, here's some of the things that I've managed to do with my club hands because of MIDI and other things, right?
Oh, yes.
Three songs on the last album, all the horns are done by me. The horn arrangements, getting them all in place and all that. And that was truly amazing to me that I could do that. And it's really just listening to what goes on inside your head sometimes.
Wow, that's fantastic. Good on you, Jim. Good on you.
You know? And so yeah. I know how to shape chords and I know about inverted chords and I know a lot of stuff that a lot of people that should know don't know.
But, yes.
But I need the guys that do it to come in and do it for me. Right?
Yeah.
You know, it's all right for me to go, well, this is the ballpark, but I need the real guys to come in and I love sitting in with them and hearing them interpreting what I've done.
Yes.
You know, I think
on that, have they ever interpreted something that you have an idea about and you've gone, no, that's not what I mean? Or do they are on the same wavelength as you and do it exactly how you expect it to be?
Minefield, but the truth of the matter is...
it is, sorry.
The truth of the matter is that sometimes people do things that you don't expect that are just right, just so perfect.
Yes.
Just so perfect, right? And other times my real problem is not at this stage of the game. By this stage of the game, we've worked out the inversions of chords and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When I try to write songs with some guitarists,
mm-hmm.
they want to, rather than get the meat and potatoes sorted, they want to start putting the cream on it. Right? No, back off here.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get the song structure. Let's get the song structure sorted before you start. Can I say feckin'? Am I allowed to say that?
That's, yeah. Oh, you can say what you like, okay. Jim. You're Jim. You can say what you like.
You know, so it's feckin' wrong. You know, yep. Like it's all like and here's my total belief on it all. It's just a demo until you go, I think that's as good as we can get it.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it's the decision you make, and will it get better later? Who knows?
Yeah.
But you've got to draw a line in the sand somewhere and say this is finished.
Well, that's a question I was going to say to you. Are you, I want to see if we can get a better take. Oh, let's keep going and going and going. When really, probably the third take would have been enough.
Oh, I would like to consider myself a first take chap.
Oh, good. I like
first
that.
Take
chap. I like that.
Yeah. When people are jotting things down while they're listening to the song, I like to record them,
right,
and see what I get. And, you know, some that's great. I just did a song with Doug Brown. He brought this song along. We needed to change it to make it more relevant. I suggested something. He did that. It sounded wrong.
Yeah.
Right, so he suggested that he should do something else, and he did that. And then the thing that was wrong suddenly became right. So I guess what I'm saying here is when it comes to songwriting, you just got to let things go. You got to allow the song to be symbiotic, to take on its own relationship, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's most important, you know.
And it's telling a story, so it has to be organic in that
way.
Yes,
absolutely. And the story has to create the correct amount of emotion.
Yes. Yeah. Now, I want to talk a little bit, Jim, about, because you're a fantastic singer as well.
Thank you.
And how did you first realise, or what made you want to first start singing while you were playing drums?
I remember this.
And how hard was that for
I
you?
I remember this rehearsal on my back lawn, or sorry, my mother and father's back lawn, I should say, in the suburb of St. Peter's in Adelaide. And we were set up there and it was a beautiful day and we were about 13 and we were ready to rock.
Yeah.
Everybody tuned up and tap, 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 and yeah, and vocal mics working. And then somebody said, well, who's going to sing? Hear that silence?
Yeah.
Magnify that
that's
by
what
10. And that's who was going to sing, no one.
Yeah, right.
So, and then,
so you stepped up to the plate.
And then I said, give me that friggin' mic.
Yep.
Right. So I got the mic. There was no boom stands in those days. It was actually located between my two legs.
Oh, okay.
Straight
yep.
stand, and I had to play around it. And the thing that keeps sticking in my head is that we did Honky Tonk Woman that day.
Cool, yeah.
And I'm still doing it now.
Yep. And that's
something's never
a fair
changed.
Whack at it. So you wouldn't want to get the words wrong now, Jim.
I can't. As much as I try, I forget everything else, but I can't forget Honky Tonk Woman. That was imprinted
Fantastic.
On my brain so long ago that I can't forget that.
That's perfect. I like that. So you sing a lot in the... Are you the only singer in Finn?
I am the only singer in Finn. The other guys sing a bit of harmonies. In Fink, I sing more harmonies than anything else, which is, you know, really lovely. I get to be a drummer first and a second.
Yep. What I found about you two guys, about you and Keith, is that you harmonise just so beautifully. I mean, Keith's voice is just amazing and you harmonise and it's just like, wow, just everything else fades away and all you hear is just your beautiful voices harmonising.
Well, you know, that's kind of like in a lot of ways because we sang so much together at parties.
Yes.
You know, and that kind of at the end of the day, actually, it's time together. Things become apparent when you spend time together. And
that's
what
right.
I'd like to think that Keith and I create is, you know, a thing where we're both listening to each other. I'm not sure if this is going to be the right word, but homogenous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you don't have to think too much about it. You know where it is. You know where it falls. You just do it. And
becomes very organic.
Yes, and the more organic it is, I think the more people appreciate it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, you guys have been doing a lot of gigs around Pyrmont and, of course, the Merton Hotel in Rozelle.
Yes.
And
Orange Grove Hotel in Lilyfield. Look, what I'd really love to do, and I want to say this publicly, is that I think that this area that I live in with the amount of venues located in it could be the seniors hub of Sydney, so 35 plus, right? And you want to come out and have a good time in Sydney, you come to Rozelle and there's a bus that takes you around all the venues.
Oh, is there really?
Well,
I did not know that.
I've got a guarantee of a bus.
Okay.
I have it in writing, so we'll see what happens. And I'm going to pursue this because we like, since the cross was destroyed, I'm going to say, destroyed.
Oh, yes.
We haven't had a musical precinct in Sydney. Newtown is recognised as a musical hub for 25 down.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Where do the 25 plus go?
Exactly.
You know, they're not into that teenage stuff anymore. And please don't think that I'm saying there's anything wrong with being a teenager at all. I was once one myself, and yes. I was a rather unruly teenager, you know. So, like, teenage years at the time for exploring, having fun, getting your shit together, getting your head sorted out, right? Let them go, right? But 25 plus, they're going, oh, I don't want to deal with that anymore. What else is there around, you know? And look, I'm not purporting ageism, because I find ageism rather pointless and a waste of time.
Yeah.
But I'm advocating that when they feel ready, they can come on board, you know?
Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, one of the points of me doing these shows is to get the word out there that there is so much live music around, and get out of your living room and go and listen to some, and go and support your musicians, your pubs, your clubs, and all of that kind of thing. You know, that's what we've got to get back to from the 80s, when they were such a late 70s and 80s, when they were such a big heyday, you know?
Yes.
We need to get something of that back.
Well, I don't know that we will get that back like that, but we can get something else happening that's just as poignant and will lead to as many opportunities.
Yeah, that's right. And that's what we all want as musicians, and we want our pay to go up.
Ah, well, that goes without saying.
It does. Now, I want to take a little break here, because I have another song, and it's called My Old Man that you've written. And, of course, that's about your da.
No, it's not.
It's not?
Somebody else's da.
Okay.
Yeah, I wrote this song for somebody I care about a great deal.
Because I listened to that and I went, oh, Jim's writing about his dad. And so it's not about yours.
No.
Okay.
Somebody else's
dad. Well, right. Well, I think you do an amazing job at it. So let's just have a moment here and listen to My Old Man. As I said, Jim, fantastic song again. And I do have one more track of yours that I would like to play.
Okay,
But we'll leave that for another few minutes, I think, and close with that one maybe. So can you tell me a funny story from any gig that you've either played at or been to?
Oh, God, funny story.
Yes. Or maybe one that's not so funny but quite interesting, you know.
Let me think about that. Being put on spot. If we'd been talking about funny stories, I would have written you of them.
Yes, well, I do know that you are a great storyteller, being an Irishman, and I know that there would be something happening. Has a guitarist or a singer ever fallen into your drum kit?
Fortunately, no, but there's now you've led me to singer incidents.
Okay, let's go with that.
Okay, well, this is many, many years ago. Many, many years ago. I was still in South Australia, and we went down to Victor Harbour, which was a whole 50 miles away, you know. It was a long, long way in those days. No freeways or nothing. And so it was kind of an isolated community. And the lead singer at the time kept pulling the piss out of them all.
Oh.
Yeah, like with lines like, and they were quite funny lines. You would have heard this song on the radio down here if you had radio.
Yeah.
Right? Or you would have heard this song on the radio down here if you had electricity yet. You know?
Oh, dear.
You know what I'm saying, right? So they were funny to the rest of us, but not funny to the people that were on the receiving end. Yeah.
Oh, I could just about see the smoke coming out their ears.
Oh, yeah, they started chucking things at him.
Oh, gee.
Yeah, but the funny thing was, They were bits of cabanossi and cheese and biscuits off the fucking plates that were in front of them because it was a bring your own, you know, supper dance. I don't know whether a lot of the kids out there would understand the supper dance, but yeah, we'll supply the piss, we'll supply the band, we'll charge you a fee to get in, but you bring your own victuals.
Munchies.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Right, but then to make matters worse after all this, and I'd been telling to STFU.
Yes. Be kind of quiet.
Yep. Stop with all this business. You're going to get us in trouble, mate. You know, it was funny the first time, right? It was kind of humorous for them the second time. By the third time he laid it on them, they had grimaces on their face. By the fourth time, they were definitely unhappy. You know, like in betweens there, you should have thrown in an Adelaide joke. If you'd thrown in an Adelaide joke, if you'd had the sense to deride yourself, you could have saved us. But instead, the stage was covered in food bits.
Oh my goodness! As long as none of you got physically hurt.
Oh no! But he got emotionally hurt. I gave him a serve for that afterwards.
Oh, I would too. It's just bad. Performance, you know, you just don't
bad
do that.
Etiquette, you know.
Yeah, bad etiquette,
that's bad
the one.
You know, you don't want to alienate the audience. You want to get them to pay attention, as George Carlin used to say, you get them to open their mouth and laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And while they're laughing, you push the truth down their throats.
That's it.
That's the game. Right.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to ask you, Jim, who is your favourite drummer that you look up to or that you go, oh, yeah, he does some things that I'd like to learn how to do or, you know? So is there someone that you look up to?
We would have to go back to that 11-year-old epiphany it would be John Bonham by a long stretch, but then after him came Ian Paice, and then because of them I learned about Gene Krupa. And then there was the guy from the Police who was just so unique in the way that he played. So I try not to think in exclusives where, oh, this is the best.
People that have made
impressions, you know.
Yeah, made impressions. Yep. What do you think of Ringo Starr's drumming? Because I think it's quite unique.
MF. He's a melon farmer of the highest order. He is the greatest. I love Ringo so much. That guy swung like a melon farmer.
Yeah.
He was just brilliant.
Did it. And he used to sit so high up in the kit. Not like some drummers like to sit low, and he always seemed to sit quite high. Yeah.
Okay, so here's another thing about Ringo that most people aren't aware of. He was a left-hander and played a right-handed drum kit. Because, and I am a left-hander and I played a right-handed drum kit for exactly.
Are you?
Yes, for exactly everything I do is left-hand. I am right.
I did not know that about you.
I'm right brain, I can tell you. Right?
Yeah.
So Ringo has created these beautiful tom things that only somebody with his brain or mine could imagine.
Yeah.
It, you know, it's simple and it's beautiful.
Yeah. I'm most impressed with Ticket to Ride, which is one of my favourite Beatles tunes, because it has this like syncopated. And not every drummer can get it correct, I tell you. There's a lot that cannot get it. They end up playing a straight feel.
A lot of drummers that can't play a swing or a shuffle either.
Yeah. Oh, man, you know what? So true. Yeah. One of the first questions I say to a drummer if I'm working with them, I go, say, do you know the difference between a swing and a shuffle? And
no.
Look at you.
Do you know what a swing groove is? let's start with that. Do you know what a swing is? And if they say yeah, then you say, describe the difference between the swing and the shuffle.
Yeah, and you know what you end up getting is a swing shuffle, a shuffle.
Or a swing.
Yes. And it's very important too for the feel of blues.
You've got to be like, you know, I like to describe it as bee sticks of difference.
Yeah.
Right? The differences are so minor but so major to the end result.
Absolutely. And most people can't tell the difference. It did take me a while, but now I obviously can, and I'm just like, oh, no, that's not right, man.
It's not right, man.
Not right, man. No,
not really right.
Now, another drummer I'd like to ask your opinion on is Karen Carpenter.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Karen was, she was in the pocket. She was simple in the pocket. And she was singing over the top of that shit too, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, no. I've been a fan of Karen for a long time. I'm a bit disappointed at what she did to herself in the end, you know? Like, she should have had more esteem than to take her own life. And she should have had more esteem than to buy in the bulimic and you're too fat bullshit.
Absolutely.
Another mirror. Go to the amusement park. Get a mirror that shows you as a really, really skinny person so you can see it in your own mind.
Yeah. What she really needed to only see was what a fantastic musician she was.
Yeah.
And the tone in her voice, just breathtaking.
Oh, there were so many things about Karen Carpenter that I liked. So many things. Yeah. Simplicity. But I've seen her actually give the drum kit a fair whacking and go to town on it.
Oh, wow,
And I was pretty impressed with that too. She was very, very capable.
Yeah. Did you see her live?
No. I wish.
Not
lucky enough. Not lucky enough.
Yeah.
No. I did see some good ones.
Yeah. So what was of the live bands or live acts overseas or Australian, doesn't matter, that you've seen, which is stand out in your mind?
18 years old at a place in Glenelg, coming out after seeing Cold Chisel rip the arse out of a bus and to put their latest album on in the car on the drive home and turn the fragging thing up to 10 and just be like, and, you know, here I was singing the songs in the car that I'd just seen these guys tear the ass out. Man, they were so good. You know, they were there. They were giving it their all. They were owning the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know. One of them.
Those were the days.
One of them. But you know, I remember seeing Luther Vandross in town at the Hilton. And I was so close to the stage that I got to put my feet on the stage, tilt back in my chair and just go, ah, how good's this? He looked down at me. He looked at my boots on the stage. He looked at me and he's gone, no, I ain't seen nothing of this guy. He's loving this. And it was just absolutely brilliant. Steely Dan, brilliant.
Oh, wow, awesome.
What's his name? One of my favourite guys ever since I was 27. I Feel Good guy. He was disappointing.
James Brown.
He was disappointed.
Yeah,
he was having a shitty night and there was lots of $50 I gotchas going off. And every time he does it, I gotcha, he's taking $50 out of their pay because he's caught them making a mistake. And there was a lot of agachas that night, and he walked off and he didn't come back and do all the, you know, cape draped over his shoulders, falling to the ground, shave his stuff. Mm-hmm. He was pissed off about something, and I was pissed off that he was pissed off about that something, and I didn't see 100% game spent.
Yeah, no, that's right. Pay your money.
My money.
And yes. Now, I think that that's something else too. I believe doesn't matter what goes on in your life before a gig or through the week, you turn up to that gig and you give it your 100%.
You do your job.
Absolutely.
You do your job. You do your job. Mm-hmm. That's it. You do your fucking job.
And our job is make people happy,
and forget
smiling,
about this shitty
dancing.
Life.
That's right, because we are living the dream.
God, I've had the most wonderful of existences, Crystal. You know,
I know, and I love talking with you, Jim. I just love it because you have had such a wide, varied of experiences and lifetime of stories. I love your stories. They're just so much fun, and I love listening to you as a person because you're very well-read and very exceptionally intelligent as well.
I try to keep up on current affairs, you know.
Yeah.
I do.
Now, Jim, I'd like to ask you, now you used to run with Al Britton out at the Carousel and other places at Blues Jam Night. Now, they don't happen anymore because of the venues, but is there any of those in sight?
Oh, look, there's one that my good friend Dougie Brown runs every Friday night at Staves Brewery.
Mm-hmm.
In Camperdown, I think, or Broadway, Glebe, somewhere around there, right? So near the Broadway Shopping Centre.
Uh-huh.
This is probably, to me, the best place to go and have a jam. They'll look after you. You know, they got the same attitude as Al and I had, you know, that everybody deserves a go. Right? They might not be great, but who cares? You know?
Yeah, that's
and
it.
So I've actually entered into a new venture.
Oh, I like new ventures.
Yeah.
Do tell.
And I'm having a great deal of fun with it. And so rather than running jams, I've been running musical trivia nights.
Yes.
And that's a lot of fun, I can tell you.
Yep.
And if there's anybody out there that wants to talk to me about this, then I can make life very easy for them running musical trivia nights as well.
So tell the listeners, Jim, whereabouts you are doing this music trivia.
Every Wednesday.
Every
Wednesday at Miss Seelig's in Ashfield. Can I say a little more about Miss Seelig's?
Absolutely.
It's owned by a wonderful bass player who plays for Shane Pacey band called Paul Blassie. Paul has a wealth of experience running gigs. He was the major guy to book people into the Pyrmont Bridge Hotel. And he runs music there 7 nights a week.
Now that's unheard of. Seven nights a week. Fantastic.
So we need more of these. They're little places, but, you know, like, I just love the way that Paul looks after us, you know, ever increasing PA. And so we bring less and less along, you know.
And that's good news for any muso.
Especially at bottom dollar. But not only that. You know, we get 3 or 4 drinks each for nothing and a meal.
Yeah.
And so it brings it up to a workable wage again.
Yes.
So there's other things that, you know, people who are doing it tough can make it more insightful for the musician.
Yeah, and I believe too with your music trivia, there's some prizes that are handed out as well. So I think everybody should get down to Miss Seely's on any
Wednesday.
One or two or three of the days of the week, Wednesday for music trivia.
Yeah,
and I think that there's a blues jam on a
Thursday night run by George Regardis.
Yeah, and there's a jazz jam, I think that's
on
Tuesday. Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah, I try not to pay too much attention to jazz, you know. Sorry, jazzers, you know, but it's not my thing, you know. I do like a bit of Coltrane, but, you know, and Miles, and that's about me.
And that's about it. All right, what I think we'll do, Jim, is I want everybody to listen to Living in the World of Fiction, another one of your original tracks.
This one features Chris Turner on guitar.
Oh, perfect. So do you want to talk actually a little bit about Living in the World of Fiction?
How did this come about? This is another one of these COVID songs, you know, and it's about what was going on in our society at the time, and I just thought it was, you know, fiction. So what about the homeless, the homeschooled countesses? So there's two things, right? One is the homeless. We have a huge homeless problem. It was only eviscerated through COVID. We had homeschooling going on. Now, homeschool countesses, some of them got it right, but most of them got it wrong.
Absolutely, you know, yeah.
Lies that are fed to us, laws that ain't fair. In our constitution, we used to have a situation where the police could not pull you over unless they saw you in the commission of a crime.
Now
you can be just walking down the street, and like, this is a huge infringement on freedom.
Absolutely.
And nobody says anything about it. Privacy, there's none of that. You know, people think they're free because they can order Uber.
Try
and walk it out of your house in the middle of lockdown and see how free you actually are.
Yeah, that was really scary, wasn't it? You know, that the government had so much control over the people.
So
scary.
Yep.
I think now we're going to listen to Living in the World of Fiction.
Says it all.
Saying that couldn't be so. We couldn't close the world down just for a flu. Well, we've gone and done that now. Who's fooling who? Jets fly in the night, no one knows. Who watches the watches? Who owns the show? Stop your vision, we're all living in a world of fiction. So what about the homeless, the homeschool countess? Lies that are fed to us, laws that ain't fair. Ruptured environment, I guess I'm just the best. Now it seems obsessed, used to be less. These who only families in need. Can't trust the press, just the rich and the rest. Stop your bitching, we're all living in a world of fiction. We'll be right back.
a best-selling book. Why get you thinking that it's all more or less the whole world sinking? It's a hell of a mess. Stop your bitch when we're all living in a world of fiction. So what about the homeless, the homeschooled countess? Lies that are fed to us, laws that ain't fair. Ruptured environment, I guess I'm just the best. Now it seems obsessed, used to be blessed. Leaves who won't leave, families in need. Can't trust the press, just the rich and the rest. Stop your bitching, we're all living in a world of fiction. A world of fiction. Living in a world of fiction.
Well, Jim, that is another fantastic track from you. You know, I think everybody should go out and buy a Jim Finn, I was going to say record or album. I'm not quite sure what you call them these days.
Well, you know, there's a bit of a problem there, isn't there?
Yeah. So where could people purchase your music, as in a CD, as in an album?
Well, Big Rock's probably... Big Rock Australia or bigrock.com.au is probably the best place. Most of the albums I'm giving away now because most people don't want or have CD players, and so they don't want CDs.
Well, Jim, I will purchase some off you because we have a CD player in our truck and I love your music.
Thank you. Well, I think I should give you a half a dozen to, you know, in thanks.
Oh, Jim, that's very, very, very kind. Thank you.
Thanks for the beautiful promotion that you've just given me for, what, the last hour?
Yep.
Pretty good, darling.
Oh, you're welcome. As I said, you're one of my favourite people, Jim, and you will always be one of my favourite people. Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. I look forward to catching up with you very, very soon.
Likewise, my dear.
All right, then. Well, I'll say goodnight to you for now, Jim. And everyone, the links for Jim's music, where you can find him at, his gigs, will all be in the description for the show. So get out and see some live music and especially Jim Finn in his bands.
Thank you
so
much.
So you're welcome, and I'll talk to you later. Good night, Jim.
Good night, darling. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And we've just been listening to a fabulous gentleman, Jim Finn, go out and see one of his gigs. He's just a wonderful human being. So thank you again for joining me this week. Next week I have another fabulous guest for you. So until then, please stay safe, stay happy, stay cool, and stay awesome. And most of all, please stay tuned to this channel. Good evening.